Jesus' first words to his apostles after his resurrection, "Peace I leave you, my peace I give you." Isaiah prophesied about him several hundred years before his birth that he'd be called the Prince of Peace. And yet, this Prince of Peace also said, "I have come to set the earth on fire, and how I wish it were already blazing. Do you think that I've come to establish peace on the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. From now on, a household of five will be divided, three against two and two against three. Father will be divided against his son and son against his father." Whoa. "Mother against her daughter, daughter against her mother." Huh? Prince of Peace? Guys, sometimes the kind of peace that the Prince of Peace brings doesn't look like birds singing and butterflies fluttering by. It looks kind of like everything is on fire. "Peace I leave you," he said. "My peace I give you." But he gave us this caveat. "Not as the world gives, do I give it to you." You see, Jesus' peace doesn't coexist well with fake peace, with the peace of this world. In fact, if you want real peace, the kind he offers, sometimes you're going to find yourself at war with the world, with your family, with your own heart even. And if you want real peace, guys, you need to be more than a hippie. You could smoke weed and have fake peace. You need to become a spiritual warrior. Today, I'm going to show you what that looks like and how to recognize and reject the counterfeit peace this world offers us. Not as the world gives. Okay, I want to cover a few things that Jesus' peace is not. St. Augustine defined peace as the tranquility of order. Jesus' peace is not, number one, the tranquility of denial. Denial. It ain't just a river in Egypt. Sorry, cheesy. Couldn't avoid it. Sometimes, guys, we try to arrive at like tranquility by denying problems, by denying pain in our hearts, by ignoring relationship difficulties that need to be addressed and actually fixed, by ignoring things going on in our own heart that need to be dealt with. And we just kind of gloss over them. And that's not real peace. Guys, we go through life sometimes with a quiet agony knowing something's wrong. But if I just stuff all my needs, if I don't deal with it, I'm not in denial. Heck, I'm heroic. I'm being holy. Yeah, we're getting it wrong. Or maybe we recognize that something's wrong, but it's just too scary to face it. So instead of entering those battles inside of ourselves, we just kind of pretend they're not there. And then we have peace, right? Yeah, we have false peace. In some sense, that fits the Buddhist approach to peace. And I got to say this, guys. I say this with reverence for Buddhism and for Eastern spirituality. But spelling out the difference between Christian peace and Buddhist peace can help you see what Jesus does not mean by the word peace. Buddhism and Eastern mysticism try to achieve inner peace by crushing all desire and what they label the illusion of selfhood. And once you do that, well, then you can have peace. Krishnamurti, who was revered as an Eastern mystic, he said, "If we understand the problem of desire, then we will understand and be free from fear. I want something. That is the root of fear," he said. "When I want to be something, my wanting to be something and my not being that something creates fear. So long as there is the unfulfilled desire, there must be fear." Guys, that's rooted in the very Buddhist belief that desire is the root of all suffering. Therefore, get rid of everything you think you are and think you want, and fear, along with suffering, just goes away. And then there's peace, Buddha would say. And I don't disagree that that does create a kind of peace. I also think there's something really noble in that much interior self-mastery and self-control. But here's the thing, guys. A pile of rocks has peace by that definition. See, a pile of rocks doesn't want things. It's not internally conflicted. It's not aware of its selfhood. It has no desires. It has nothing to work out or work on with other people or with itself. But it's also not human. It's just a pile of rocks in the end. Listen, Jesus offers us something different. The opposite, actually. His first words in the Gospel of John ask us to pay attention to our desires. What do you want? And every word after those opening words teaches us to aim our desire toward its ultimate fulfillment, which is love. Loving God and loving with the heart of God. The heart, guys, isn't something to be spiritually annihilated in Christian philosophy and the Christian path. Desire, it's not a flame to be put out. It's a flame that you need to focus until love makes that flame a lightsaber. Yes, I'm a nerd. But really, it becomes this focused laser. And that approach to desire, that doesn't liberate you from pain so as to create peace. It actually does the opposite. Because the central image of Buddhist philosophy is a man sitting content, eyes closed, forgetful of everything, including his own existence. The central image of Christian faith, it's a man in agony, dying on a cross, arms outstretched, eyes open, looking out of himself, looking outward in love, looking in longing and love, looking for you. Both men, both invite us to peace. Both men tell us not to be afraid, but one, because you're an illusion anyway, and your desires aren't worth paying attention to, and your suffering is also an illusion. The other, because love wins in the end. So you might be hearing me so far thinking, well, cool, but this doesn't apply because I'm not a Buddhist. Okay, fair enough. But I have to point out, while Buddhists do this and move past desire in a really noble monastic way that requires intense spiritual formation, most of us kind of do the same thing in our daily lives in principle, but in a totally different and dysfunctional way. See, what we do, thinking it's holy and maybe even noble sometimes, is stuff our needs. We pretend they're not there. Or we grow frigid on the inside when we experience our needs or wants and the disconnect between where we know we're supposed to be in our relationships, in our lives, in our heart, and where we actually are. We look at that and we stuff it rather than look at it and rather than engage the conflict with ourselves and others. Or we grow frigid. And why? Because we want to avoid pain and suffering, just like the Buddha, but in a different way. And guys, it makes sense. And I'll tell you why it makes sense. Because suffering stinks. It's really hard. But I'll tell you what, man, you got to stay in it and go through it to have peace sometimes. When my bride was experiencing healing from the trauma of childhood abuse, as the man in her life, I came to embody everything that had hurt her when she was finally facing those wounds and they felt new. Here I am as the male. Not fun. And during that really difficult time, I had a choice. Deny my own longing for intimacy and love and let my heart go frigid and distance myself from my wife, but just go where it feels safe. That was one choice. Or stay here. Feel the pain, embrace it, and don't run away. And fulfill my vows, which, by the way, those wedding vows sound so simple on your wedding day, to have and to hold. Is that all? Really? Well, what about those times of intense pain? Yeah, don't run. Just have. Just hold. Just be there. Just don't go away. Don't deny that the pain is there, and don't deny your beloved. The image of the Sacred Heart came to mean so much to me during that time in my life to get me through it. It's that heart that's on fire with pain. And I'll tell you what, guys, there's no ice in that image. He never grew frigid. He never shut his heart behind a door. He didn't run from his own heart so that he could have, quote, peace. He made peace with the pain, and it purified his love. He walked through life with that pain. So guys, I stuck with it. I have and hold my wife still. And I kept loving and I love her still. And thank God, best decision I ever made. Well, second to my decision to ask her to marry me. And thank God that my bride faced her pain because what she went through was way worse than what I had to go through during that time of healing. Guys, how many people make a false peace with their inner demons instead of facing them head on? They just don't deal with it. Because the inner turmoil caused when you kick it up is too dang painful, so they pretend it's not there. Meanwhile, those little inner dragons keep popping their heads out and breathing fire on their lives in different ways. What is that? What just happened? What just came out? Nothing. Everything's fine. No, it's not fine. And thank God she faced it head on. She didn't go over it, under it, around it. She went through it, through that fire, out of love for herself, out of love for me, out of love for her family. Guys, the path to real peace is painful sometimes. It's not a denial of pain and of suffering. Jesus' peace is not the tranquility of denial. Two, the peace of Jesus is not peacekeeping, which is really the tranquility of force. The Spanish army, which conquered most of its enemies with relative ease around the world, was stopped from really settling north of the Texas border for one simple reason, the Comanche Indians. who were arguably the greatest cavalry in human history. This is kind of crazy, guys. A Comanche warrior could ride at full gallop while positioning his body on the side of his horse with no saddle. I can't even do that sitting in this chair. Sideways, no saddle, and aim his arrow under the horse's neck with the horse's body as cover to fire at his enemy. And they could fire 30 arrows in the time it took to reload a single musket. And they fired with so much accuracy. There's actually a record of Comanche children playing by shooting insects off of blades of grass. Okay, that sounds more like fairy tale and more like Tolkien's description of elves, but it's all well-documented and historically true. Kind of mind-blowing. Samuel Colt, his revolver became popular because it was the only thing that could fire fast enough to create a fair fight with the speed and accuracy of Comanche archers. And that pistol, Colt's pistol, was popularly called the Peacekeeper. Peacekeeper, a gun? Did it really create real peace, though? I could see how you could argue it could keep peace, but was there tranquility of order at the end of the day? No. What there was the tranquility of superior firepower. And that can help stop violence, and that's a good thing, but that doesn't bring about actual peace. And in some situations, it could bring out the domination of one people over another. Not actual peace, though. In our lives, what's a peacekeeper look like? It looks like a dad who rules his home with an iron fist. It looks like a wife who gets so angry at the first sign of healthy conflict that it just shuts the conversation down. It looks like a boss who fires you for challenging him in any way, shape, or form. A peacekeeper knows how to keep conflict away. That's true. But he does not know the actual real peace of Jesus. Not as the world gives, do I give it to you. 3, real peace, it isn't a ceasefire. General MacArthur said, a truce just says you won't shoot for a while. Peace comes when the truth is known, the issue is settled, and the parties embrace each other. The DMZ separating North and South Korea, it's a place of ceasefire. It isn't a place of fighting currently, actively. But it sure is not a place of peace. Look, if you walk into the DMZ, you're going to get shot really fast. A friend of mine who was in the Army told me that he was told when he was stationed there that the average life expectancy of a soldier in front line of the DMZ would be about 15 seconds. Whoa. Look, there's no missiles being lobbed across the DMZ today, but North and South Korea, they're still officially at war. Guys, sometimes you do need a ceasefire in order to start dialogue to work on actual peace and reconciliation. But that ceasefire and the actual peace are not the same thing. And tragically, we sometimes rest there in our personal lives. We prefer not going to that next level of rooting out the actual problems, the causes of our wars in life, because we'd be stepping into a DMZ in our personal lives, man. Walking straight into real problems. And you know what happens when you do that? Sometimes everything might blow up in your face. I have come to set the world on fire. Why? Looking for real, actual peace. So instead, because we don't want that blowback, we get comfortable. We get comfortable living with unspoken conflict. Things we need to deal with to have actual peace. Do not talk about that. Your dad does not drink too much. He's not an alcoholic. He just had a long day at work. And you know what? You bring it up is what makes him drink. Don't bring that up again. Yeah. Ceasefire. Or maybe your friend's heading off in the wrong direction. You know, there's a saying that friends don't let friends drink and drive. Well, friends don't let friends go to hell either. But you say nothing. Why? Because it might upset him. Or there's a woman, a spouse, who sees her husband develop a work relationship that looks like a, quote, work wife. Guys, it's never okay. Or vice versa. A husband sees his wife develop a relationship at the gym or at church, and it's making him real uncomfortable. But you know what? That spouse, they want to be supportive. They want to avoid conflict. They want, quote, peace. And they know it might blow up on them with accusations of, oh, you're just jealous and you're controlling if they step into that no man's land with an uncomfortable conversation. So what do? They learn to ignore it. And you know what? I suppose that does produce a type of peace, but it's not real. It's not ordered. There's a small cancer growing, dividing that relationship. Look, if you have conflict with no one all the time, and everyone likes you all the time, you might have a false peace as the world gives, but you do not have peace as Jesus gives. The peace of Jesus Christ clashes with the false pieces of the world. They don't coexist, guys. For the Christian, Sometimes real peace looks like a fire on the earth. It looks like coming into conflict with the world, the devil, our very selves, to work for the tranquility of order, in the words of St. Augustine, under God, under the truth. Let me tell you what real peace looks like sometimes. It looks like St. Francis being tempted in an intense moment to lust. And what did he do? He ripped his clothes off and he jumped into a thorn bush filled with roses and thorns to end that battle, to conquer the disorder in his heart. Now, as the story goes, God made the thorns disappear from the bush. I think God was saying, yeah, Francis, maybe don't do that. And if you're watching me, don't do that. But here's the thing, guys. What we should imitate is Francis's willingness to do whatever it takes to conquer his vices, because he wanted actual peace, the peace of order in his soul. I mean, how many guys are lust addicted and they won't even throw their phone into a thorn bush, right? Well, you do what it takes. End the peace that you're making, end the truce, end the ceasefire with your own sin. And to the extreme, guys, I've met Christians who have made peace with their fall from grace as they fall into sin, who've literally said, look, man, I'm leaving my vocation. I'm leaving my spouse for this new fling. And I really like my alcohol, okay? So leave me alone. And while they're making that decision and while they're falling from grace, here's the mystery, and it's really sad. They actually can look elated. And you've probably experienced this. They can look peaceful for a while. Why? Because they've put down their sword and fighting was so tiring for them. And they just stopped fighting. But you could see that false peace fade over time. And the shell of a person who they used to be is left behind. By the way, if that's you watching, God can redeem that shell too. But you got to pick that sword back up. Real peace looks like what St. Francis did. Real peace, it looks like St. Telemachus. He was a monk from the 4th century. And he felt like God was calling him out of his monastic life into Rome, into the city. And when he got there, he found out why. He was shocked that 4 centuries after Christ, gladiators were killing each other for people's entertainment. And guys, look, he could have just moved along and gone on with his day, but he didn't. He ran into the Colosseum during the games, went onto the Colosseum floor, put his body between 2 huge gladiators who were about to kill each other, and he demanded that in the name of Jesus Christ, they stop. Because Telemachus didn't stay in his place. He didn't get in line. He didn't maintain the false peace of silence in the face of an injustice. He stood up and he did something about it. And when the world, with its fake peace and pleasures, encounters the real peace of Christ, the world did to him what it always does. According to his contemporary historian Theodoret, the crowd turned on him and stoned him to death. President Ronald Reagan told that story at the National Prayer Breakfast years ago, and he was imagining the scene that must have unfolded when the gladiators and the crowd woke up to what they had done and were horrified at themselves. He said, suddenly, a strange thing happened. A silence fell over the Colosseum, and then, someplace in the upper tiers, an individual made his way to an exit and left. And then others began to follow. And in the dead silence, everyone left the Colosseum. That was the last battle to the death between gladiators and the Roman Colosseum. Never again did anyone kill, or did men kill each other for the entertainment of a crowd. Because of that one small voice that could hardly be heard above the tumult, in the name of Christ, stop. It's something we could be saying to each other throughout the world today. Guys, it was because of that Catholic saint, St. Telemachus, that the Emperor Honorius heard about what happened, was horrified, was struck to the heart, and decided to ban gladiatorial contests forever. True story. If it weren't for the Catholic Church, we'd still be going and seeing gladiators kill each other for fun. Guys, Telemachus was a warrior. He was a warrior for the real peace of Jesus Christ. He didn't need to be liked by the world. He didn't need to be respected. He didn't want to be respected by the wrong people. Do you? Because he refused to coexist with evil in society. The peace of Christ, it looks like that. Because he didn't want to be respected by the world. He didn't want to be respected by people that a Christian has no business trying to get the respect of. How about you? He refused to coexist with evil. He stood up for the truth, tranquility of order. The peace of Christ looks like that. It looks like the missionaries of charity and an archbishop from New York. In his book, Priests for the Third Millennium, Cardinal Dolan describes a scene on Good Friday in 1989. He was at an AIDS hospice run by the Missionaries of Charity. Now, this is back when we didn't really understand how AIDS was spread or how it wasn't spread. So people who were ministering to people with AIDS, it was a scary scene. And it was also back when getting AIDS meant you'd die a pretty horrible death pretty quickly. So it was really terrifying. But he went from bed to bed so the patients could kiss the cross of Jesus Christ on that Good Friday service. He wrote, "I noticed one emaciated man in the corner who seemed agitated and kept beckoning to me to come to him. As I began in turn to approach his bed, the sisters halted me, warning me that this man was unusually violent, hateful to all, and had actually attempted to bite the attending sisters a number of times. Of course, you realize the consequence of being bitten by one with AIDS. However, the poor man kept signaling for me to come near. What was I to do? What would any priest do? Slowly, cautiously, I approached and carefully extended the crucifix, which he grasped and kissed. Then he laid back down, exhausted. The next day, Holy Saturday, the sisters called to tell me the same man had asked to see me. I went and, again, in company with two of the sisters as, quote, bodyguards, approached him. As I got nearer, he whispered, 'I want to be baptized. I know nothing about Christianity or the Catholic Church,' he said, with the little bit of strength he had left. 'In fact, I've hated religion all my life. All I do know is that for 3 months I've been here dying, and these sisters are always happy. When I curse them, they look at me with compassion in their eyes. All I know is that they have joy and I don't, and when I ask them in desperation why they're so happy, all they answer is, Jesus. I want this Jesus. Baptize me and give me this Jesus. Give me joy.' Never as a priest has it brought me more satisfaction to baptize, anoint, and give First Holy Communion to someone. He died at 3:15 a.m. on Easter morning." Real peace, the peace Jesus gives you, it isn't as the world gives. It comes to you when you step into danger, step into the DMZ, step into no man's land and face your own pain, conflict with other people, and the risk that comes with offering the love of Jesus Christ to a wounded world. The peace of Jesus looks like an alcoholic who will not stop battling his addiction even though he's so dang tired. It looks like someone who's terrified of the pain inside themselves but goes to counseling anyway. It looks like a spouse who won't back down from that conflict to save her marriage. It looks like a person who won't go along to just get along. It looks like that person who refuses the false peace offered by this world. The peace of living by lies. And the peace of Jesus, guys, it might not even feel like peace when you're in the middle of the battle, but it's real. Jesus himself was offered false peace when he was on the cross. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants to. For he said, "I am the Son of God." In that moment of taunting, I'm sure Jesus was reminded powerfully that he could have just called on legions of angels to rescue him and escape all the pain of the human condition and live with all the serenity of a Buddha. He was offered the peace of peacekeepers too. "So you are a king," Pilate asked him. Guys, all he had to do was submit to the protection provided by worldly power in that moment. The tranquility of Caesar's subjects, not the tranquility of order under God. One Hail Caesar in that moment, it would have got him off the hook. He refused. He was offered the peace of a ceasefire too. "Come down from that cross and we'll believe in you. Heck, we'll believe with you." Archbishop Fulton Sheen wrote about that offer to come down from the cross and make false peace with the world. That the world was saying in that moment, "Jesus, you are too insistent in the rights of your heavenly Father. You are too uncompromising about sin. You're too intolerant about your divinity. Can you not see that your claim to be the Son of God and Redeemer of the world is upsetting the whole world? Come down and we'll have peace." Yes, if he had come down, there would have been peace, but a false peace. Our Lord stayed on the cross until it was finished. He would not compromise his divinity. He would not compromise obedience to his Father's will. He would not minimize the horror of sin. And so he stayed on the cross, making war against evil until the battle was over, like a dying soldier who feebly fights with ebbing strength until his cause is victorious. That is why he could cry at the end, "It is consummated. It is finished." Jesus won. He won the war on the cross. The war of sin, death, darkness, despair, and hell. He fought until his last drop of blood was shed, and then was it finished. Then there was peace. And he won that war for you, so you could enter real peace forever. Friend, when Jesus invites you to his peace, he's inviting you to be a spiritual warrior with him on the cross, which takes way more courage, believe it or not, than being a warrior who faces tanks and guns. I have a few friends who have seen serious wartime action. My brother-in-law is among them. He's highly decorated. He was in over 100 combat operations, serving as a support team member for SEAL Team 6. I'm really proud of him for this. But he's told me many times, and it's taken a while for me to actually believe him, that war isn't as scary as everyday life. That the adrenalized experience of being under heavy enemy gunfire, it doesn't take nearly as much courage as the truly terrifying battles in life that we all have to face. Like facing a serious problem in your marriage, or an inner demon like a childhood wound, or facing the truth when you've been living a lie, or challenging people who are on the wrong path when that challenge might come at a real cost to you. But guys, that's what we're called to do. And if that feels overwhelming, that's okay. Don't lose heart. Look, any soldier goes through lots of training before they reach hero status. Train yourself. Work on getting comfortable with discomfort. I mean, fasting can help you be tougher in every area of your life. Work on facing your interior wounds by just picking one friend to open up to today, and then maybe later on, you get muster the courage to go to counseling and talk with a spiritual director about it. Work on getting good at confrontation by asserting one little thing today. Like any warrior, the way of the peaceful warrior, the real warrior of Christ, just takes a little intentional training. And here's my promise, and I believe it's the promise of Jesus Christ too. When it comes to your spiritual battles, victory is not waiting for you on the other side of the battle. It doesn't even come if you win. Victory comes when you decide to fight. Because the moment you enter that battle for real tranquility, tranquility of order under God, the battle has set things right in all those countless ways in your life and in the world, the moment you enter that battlefield, you've just won the battle within yourself. You've conquered the false peace offered to you by this world, which cannot coexist with the peace of Jesus Christ. And in the words of Monsignor Shea, the deck is stacked so that if you don't give up, you always win. You always win. Even if in the world's eyes, you lose, like the man on Calvary, you can still say with him, "It is finished. I have overcome the world." Peace I leave you. My peace I give you. Not as the world gives do I give it to you. May God bless you with his peace, real peace. Amen.